Welcome back, everyone. It's wonderful to be together as always. And I will be reading today's teaching for Reggie. She writes, "Unfortunately, a doctor's appointment had to be changed for this morning, but I may be back in time for discussion." So she sends her apologies for not being here now. And she writes, "As I always say, it's so wonderful that we meet every week, and I love that we continue to support each other in our Jewish meditation and mindfulness practice journey. I love that we co-create this sacred, spiritually nurturing virtual space. A true blessing. I am dedicating this teaching in honor of my mother's eighth yahrzeit." This is, of course, Reggie's mother's eighth yahrzeit. "This past Tuesday and Wednesday, the 5th of Iyar, which is always Israel Independence Day. To Mom," she writes, "I love you and miss you." This week, we have the double parsha, Acharei Mot Kedoshim. The double parsha focuses on elevating daily life through holiness, connecting the dramatic atonement rituals of Yom Kippur, listed in Acharei Mot, connecting those to practical, ethical, and social commandments in Kedoshim. It bridges the sacred and mundane, emphasizing that true holiness is achieved through acts of justice, love, and sexual morality. Acharei Mot focuses on the ultimate integration of the high priest, a person, in the Holy of Holies, a place, on Yom Kippur, in time, while Kedoshim brings that same sanctity into the mundane world. In Kedoshim, we have the call to holiness. The parsha starts with, "You shall be holy, for I, Hashem, your God, am holy." In Leviticus 19:1-4, God spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the whole Israelite community and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Eternal, your God, am holy. You shall each revere your mother and your father and keep my Sabbaths. I, the Eternal, am your God. Do not turn to idols or make molten gods for yourself. I, the Eternal, am your God.'" God goes on defining and describing to Moses many ritual laws aimed at helping people live lives of holiness. Kedoshim, sometimes known as the Holiness Code, instructs the Israelites on how to live a holy life through ethical, interpersonal, and ritual commandments. The laws described include some of those recorded in the Ten Commandments that were mentioned just a few minutes ago, as well as laws about farming. For example, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap all the way to the edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not pick your vineyard bare. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I, the Eternal, am your God. God goes on to say, "You shall not deal deceitfully or falsely with another. You shall not swear falsely by my name, profaning the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not insult the deaf or place a stumbling block before the blind. You shall fear your God. I am the Lord. You shall not render an unfair decision. Do not favor the poor or show deference to the rich. Judge your neighbor fairly. You shall not hate your kinsman in your heart. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your kinfolk. Love your neighbor's welfare as if it were your own. I am the Lord. You should observe my laws." And here we have the famous line, "Love your neighbor as yourself," from Leviticus 19:18. And we sing this on every Shabbat at TBC as we greet each other. "When you enter the land and plant any tree for food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden for 3 years, but in the fourth year, all its fruit shall be set aside for jubilation before the Lord. And then in the fifth year, you may use its fruit. that its yield may be increased. I, the Lord, am your God. You shall rise before the aged and so show deference to the old. You shall fear your God. I am the Lord. When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not wrong him. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as one of your citizens. You shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I, the Lord, am your God. And there are many other laws that God mentions in this parsha that you can read. The parsha ends with these words: You shall sanctify yourselves and be holy. You shall be holy to me, for I, God, am holy, and I have set you apart from other peoples to be mine. Holiness is bringing divine standards into daily actions, adopting godly attributes like compassion, forgiveness, and righteousness into daily life. Holiness is not for individual striving. It is a communal responsibility. In the parsha, the laws are addressed to the entire assembly of Israel. Both the religious rituals and practical ethics that affect daily life are included. There are three dimensions of holiness. Holiness in time. This is considered the first type of holiness mentioned in Torah with Shabbat. Heschel famously called Shabbat a palace in time that exists independently of space. And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says, the Sabbath is the presence of God in the world, open to the soul of man. God is not in things of space, but in moments of time. Holiness in space, certain physical locations such as Israel and the Temple of Jerusalem are considered inherently or designated holy, and for some of us, our synagogues are holy. And holiness in people, the Jewish people are called to be a holy nation, Goy Kadosh, not through inherent superiority, but through the obligation to follow the mitzvot and maintain a relationship with God and hopefully acknowledge the holiness in each other. In Kabbalistic thought, holiness is viewed as an overflow of divine energy that humans must catch and integrate into the physical world. It's about becoming a pure vessel or chariot for the divine presence, the Shekhinah. The core of Lurianic Kabbalah is the idea that holiness is trapped within the material world and our job is to liberate it. Isaac Luria, the Arizal, taught that at creation, divine vessels shattered and sparks of holy light fell into the husks, the klipot of matter. Our mission is to kun il olam, gathering these sparks through purposeful action. The Baal Shem Tov says, in everything within creation there exists sparks of holiness. No thing is devoid of these sparks, even trees and stones. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks notes that holiness is not abstract. It is lived through justice, kindness, and boundaries. Holiness is bringing divine standards into daily actions. He defines holiness as a democratized way of living that imbues the ordinary with the charisma of the divine. For Sacks, holiness is primarily about the space we make for God in our lives and society. One of his favorite phrases was, etching everyday life with the charisma of holiness. Just as God created order in the cosmos, humans are charged with creating moral and spiritual order through painstaking care in their speech and actions. He famously argued that in a secular age, we must fight to maintain the sense of the sacred against the idolization of power, wealth, and self-interest. He said, "Holiness is the space we make for the otherness of God. By listening, not speaking, by being, not doing, by allowing ourselves to be acted on rather than acting." Aviva Zornberg, in her book, The Hidden Order of Intimacy, Reflections on the Book of Leviticus, points out the aspirational intent of this commandment to be holy. Holiness is not a state of perfection, not a static state, but as a morality of aspiration. We cannot truly be as holy as the divine, but it is in the effort toward holiness that righteousness and intimacy lives. She frames holiness as something that requires active choice and that enlivens us. For Zornberg, holiness is deeply tied to the human inner world and the ability to imagine a relationship with the divine. Holiness is seen as a burst of sunlight that moves us from a world of specific taboos to a state of being. Rabbi Sheila Weinberg teaches that holiness is a lived experience found in mindfulness, compassion, and the ordinary moments of life. That we encounter the divine through the simple act of breathing or by showing love and compassion to others. For Weinberg, holiness centers around these themes, mindfulness and presence. She views mindfulness as a primary entrance to holiness. By directing our attention to the present, the holy moment, and the holy breath, we can experience a moreness that transcends time and space, the divinity in others. She believes that seeing another person as a complete sacred being reveals the face of God. In her book, Let Us All Breathe Together, she explores how uniting faith with reality through deep spiritual work and social justice creates holy connections. Compassion, so these are the themes: mindfulness and presence, the divinity in others, compassion and community is the next one. This is the holiness is deeply tied to how we treat one another. She teaches that the soul of community is compassion, and the true spiritual return, teshuvah, is incomplete if it does not expand our empathy for those on the margins. The next theme, embracing vulnerability. Weinberg speaks openly about her own journey with alcoholism and recovery, viewing her sobriety as a foundational spiritual education. She teaches that our human vulnerability is not a flaw, but a source of strength that allows us to find God within ourselves. Holy work in waiting is the next theme. She suggests that holiness can be found in the slow, difficult work of waiting during times of crisis, rather than always seeking impulsive action. This holy work involves letting experiences process through the soul to allow for deep transformation. You shall be holy implies a command to become holy through life's choices. Kedusha means setting something apart for a divine purpose, elevating it from the ordinary or profane to the sacred or holy. It is both a divine attribute, God is holy, and a practical, actionable goal for humans to achieve. So how do we bring holiness into our lives? How does our meditation mindfulness practice help us in bringing holiness into our lives? And how do we define holiness for ourselves? And how and when do we experience holiness? Norman Fisher, Soketsu Norman Fisher, our beloved Zen Buddhist priest and poet, teaches that holiness is not a distant goal to be achieved, but the actual essence of every moment in our lives. He views holiness as the inherent all-rightness of everyday life and its ordinary messy moments. He teaches that seeking holiness elsewhere is a misunderstanding, as we are already expressions of this sacred reality. He believes holiness is found in everyday mind or simply paying attention to life as it is, which is in itself profound and beautiful. He views our existence on this planet as fundamentally interconnected, describing the entirety of life as nothing but compassion and love. Holiness is lived out through connection, how we relate to others and engage with the world. Holiness is rooted in the marvelous nature of all impermanent things. Fisher's perspective encourages finding joy and peace in the present just as it is, rather than chasing an idealized superior version of oneself. He argues that the desire to change ourselves into something more holy or more wise, or I'll add enlightened, is actually a distraction that removes us from the holiness already present in our current state. Fisher posits that Dharma is fundamentally about relationship, not just with others, but with our own thoughts, perceptions, and the mystery of existence. He believes that recognizing the sacred in the details of daily living is a lived reality. He emphasized the necessity for a powerful vision for life that moves beyond materialist success and failure. This vision is centered on love, compassion, and a commitment to being present to the ebb and flow of life. Thich Nhat Hanh taught that holiness is not an abstract, distant state, but an accessible, everyday reality cultivated through mindfulness, concentration, and insight. He defined it as the ability to live deeply in the present moment, transforming ordinary life into sacred, holy life. He emphasizes that holiness is not found by running away from the world, but in being fully present in it, walking, sitting, and eating mindfully. He considered the community of practice, the Sangha, to be a holy body. When individuals practice mindfulness together, that gathering becomes a manifestation of holiness. As a practitioner, you create holiness. Holiness cannot be found outside of yourself. On interbeing and the sacred, he taught that God or the holy is not the other, not separate from creation, but is the ground of being present in everything, including trees, clouds, and ourselves. His perspective was to see the wonders of life as holy, encouraging people to touch the sacred in every moment of life rather than seeking it in another place. He taught that holiness is not a distant supernatural status reserved for religious icons, but a tangible energy created through the practice of mindfulness. In Buddhism, holiness is not a divine given state, but rather an inner transformation achieved through cultivating compassion, wisdom, and the holy life, brahmacharya. It signifies a mind free from clinging, living with awareness, such as nurturing compassion for others or practicing mindfulness while working. The Buddha defined the holy life not as a search for fame or ritual merit, but as a practical commitment to inner transformation. Holiness for a layperson isn't found in a separate sacred realm, but in the quality of their mind and actions, which means transforming ordinary daily activities into opportunities for spiritual growth. So Reggie leaves us with some questions to ponder, questions that were included in the previous teachings, but she repeats here. So how do we bring holiness to our lives? How does our meditation or mindfulness practice help us in bringing holiness into our lives? How do we define holiness for ourselves? And how and when do we experience holiness? Take a moment of silence, and then we'll open. open up for discussion.